Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinkney to Pinkney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinkney. I tell you, we had quite a week last week, and I want to thank all the listeners. We broke the bank. According to them, we have more than 30,000 people listening to our show. I don't know when they did it or what they were downloading, whatever it was, but they sent me a note and thanked me for just having the show. But we also have Facebook. This is an international show. People in France, England, and everyone listens to the Reverend Edward Pinkney Show. I just got back from New York, where I had the opportunity to go to Cornell University. Before that, I also spoke at the United Nations. And also Princeton University, I will be going there within the next 4 or 5 days, I believe. But what we want to do, we have two distinguished doctors on today. And but before we get to them, I want to go into some of the details, some of the things that we have done. You know, I want to talk about the struggle that has taken place in recent years in Benton Harbor. It's really a case in point, one that holds on numerous lessons for black people. The fight in Benton Harbor is a war. It's not a conflict. It is a war on whether black people will have prosperity, democracy, live in poverty, or have clean, safe water under the heels of open corporate rule. We're living in that today, you see. You know, for over 250 years, this old system that's in place today had allowed 545 people to control 330 million of us. You know, we must take back the minds of our people, you see. That's a problem. We must take back the minds of our people, because right now, you know, we are in a very compromising position, and we have allowed these people to continue to destroy us. And remember this, as a people that have been traumatized for over 450 years, we have had 450 years of abuse, mistreatment, torture, hanging, raping, the raping of the women, the raping of the men, and the raping of our children. You see, to this day, and even though we may look like a people that has no hope, God has chosen us. We are the chosen one. And this is what we want to do. We want to encourage people to make sure they understand how important it is. That's why I cannot understand how black people can go out and mistreat other black people. You see, I understand those people have been robbed of themselves. They don't know who they are, you see. They have no idea what they're doing. Only thing they think about is themselves, rather than thinking about the future of our children. And I say this because this is very, very important that people understand what we do today going to reflect on our children tomorrow. And we have to be prepared for that, because there's nothing else in this world more important than our children. And we must make sure they understand that. I know we're living in a time here like in Benton Harbor that nobody quite understands exactly what is really going on here, because, you know, we had that big water crisis here. The water crisis itself was something that people needed to know and needed to talk about, but nobody wanted to talk about. Black people didn't even want to talk about how bad the water was in the city of Benton Harbor. We have this mayor here who's been one of those guys who've been robbed of himself. You see, he have no clue who he is, what he is, and how he could help people of color, black folks. Well, I shouldn't be saying people of color because I normally don't say that. But we're in this position where we need all the help we can get, you know. And when I think about how we've been traumatized, you know, for over 450 years, and the raping of the women, the men, the children, you know, we're in a real compromising position here, you know. But we got to continue doing what we do. We got to make sure that we're building for the future of our children. There's nothing more important than our children. Nothing, you know, because that is our future. But we also have to deal with the present, you see. But the future is our children, you know. Remember, this is important. Remember, we can never control the choices and the action, the behavior of people. So don't waste your energy thinking that you can. Instead, let them be who they are. You know, let them be who they are. Let us try to move forward and do the things that need to be done. We have a huge election coming up in November. Well, we got one in August also, but the big one is November. That's when the mayor will be running, and we got to make sure that we are prepared to defeat that young man and make sure that we don't go through what we've been going through for the last 8 years and make sure that never, ever, ever happens again. And, you know, I'm excited because I know that we can win if we get out here and do what needs to be done. It's crucial that we understand that, you know, we have so many problems in the black community. We got a medical problem, health problems. Everything you could think of, it exists right here. You know, one of the reasons they have drained this community of resources. You see, when you drain a community of resources, this is what happens. You get a Benton Harbor. You get a water crisis. This is the main thing. And you know what? I thank God that God gave me the wisdom to deal with the water crisis here. You see, nobody really knew what to do. I really didn't know what to do, but God spoke to me, and he gave me the wisdom to go out here and form the Benton Harbor Community Water Council to file a petition with Joe Biden's office, the EPA, and demand that they may have clean, safe water for the residents of Benton Harbor, a black city. This has never been done in the history of mankind. Never. They never even talk about things like this because most of the time they don't anticipate that black folks can do anything. They believe that they can do that. And whatever they say and do, that's what it is. That's the way they have trained us. And most of the time we're not going to say nothing. We're not going to say a mumbling word. We're going to allow them to mistreat our children, mistreat us, and it's a continuous thing. No matter what happens, we do the same thing over and over and over again, expecting a different result. They call that mental illness. That's what they call that. So we can do this. Now we got to deal with the medical part of it, the health department. We're going to have Dr. Berry to come on shortly, and he's going to tell us what's happening in Detroit, and he's going to talk to us about it. And I know right now you probably don't understand because a lot of times people don't really get it, you see. But we need you to explain it in details how everything came about, what is going on, and what can we do to help. See, that's the main thing. What can we do to help? Especially when people are willing to help. You know, and this is where we're at today. This is where we can come together in group. We're spent on just listening to the show. You know, we get a huge listeners every Sunday. And also sometimes on Monday we don't get as many, but on Sunday, we have a huge list. So we could talk about things that need to be spoken of. And you can say whatever you want on my show. You know, it goes all around. It goes like I said, it goes to the UK, goes to France, Denmark. Everybody, I got listeners all there. We got supporters there. We got people who love us there. We got people willing to work with us there. And here's the good thing. We even got people who will donate money to you if you ask for it. So what we want to do, we want to make sure we're doing what we're supposed to do. To me, there's nothing more important than standing up. And I always talk about Benton Harbor, a very, very small community, less than 10,000 people. Less than 10,000. But it has a big voice. It has Reverend Pinkney, Dr. Tans. We got a couple of people that are actually set up and is not intimidated by this corporations, Whirlpool here. Whirlpool have stolen the land. They came down here and even had Jack Nicklaus to come here and to build a Jack Nicklaus golf course. But it wasn't for us. Surrounded by these $500,000 homes, it wasn't for us. But getting sealed, we still support people like that. We do. I mean, we like to support white folks, you see. It's unfortunate, but it's the truth. And before I bring in my first guest, I want to say this. A corrupt system strives on lies. Remember that. That's important. Because a lot of times, people just won't call these people out. That's what we do on this show. We call them out. We call a spade here. Whatever it is, we call it out. And people from all around the world listening, they want to hear about it. They want to talk about it, you know. And to me, that's crucial. You know, that's how you build. You organize. You get things done, you see. And everybody wants me on their show. I was on that Peer Morgan show out there, and he thought that he was going, that he had me. He's talking about why do black folks go around killing each other? And I didn't have a one word I told him. I said, you know, because of slavery. And it blew his mind because I didn't want to give him an opening that he wanted to have, you see. But when I said that, it kind of stopped him in his track. And then I went on telling him how bad slavery was for the people. You see, I told them how white folks came in and raped our whole family. They'll rape the mother, they'll rape the father, they'll rape the little kids. They didn't care, you know, and there was nothing they can do. And also, if they didn't like it, they could hang you. And the reason they could hang you was simple. You was property. You was only 3/5 of a human being. And if you 3/5 of a human being, they're not going to send someone to prison for hanging you, your property. That's it. And that's what we talked about. Even today, they don't consider us human beings. They don't. They do not consider us human beings today, you see. They do everything they can to destroy us. You see, you know, we got, you know, not all white folks hate us. Not all Mexicans hate us, you see. But not all black folks hate black folks. So what we want to do, we want to make sure that they understand our main objective. Our main objective is to take care of our children. That's me. You know, you might have another agenda. My biggest thing is taking care of our children. That's what I want to do. I want to make sure that I find a door open that would allow our children to grow and teach them the right thing. That's how I do it. But on that note, I'm going to bring in Dr. Berry. And let him talk, you know, because I know you're probably tired of listening to me, but this is where we at. We live in this world, and I'm going to let him tell his story. Then I'm going to bring in Dr. Coleman, and then if we still have time, I'm going to bring in my good friend Annette. So at this time, I'd like to bring in the one and only Dr. Berry. Dr. Berry, are you there? Talk to me.
I am here. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having Dr. Coleman and myself on the show. Dr. Coleman very much has been a partner in this whole episode. And I will describe what happened from my point of view, and then Dr. Coleman will come on, and she really is responsible for this horrible problem coming to light. Without her, this all wouldn't have happened. And it began in January of 2022, January last year, with a patient that Dr. Coleman sent to the hospital. This was a young black woman. It was her third pregnancy, and she had a history of having had a premature baby, which is a scourge among black people. Particularly, we have the highest rate of prematurity among any group of people in this country. And the highest risk factor for having a premature baby is having had a premature baby in a past pregnancy. And one of the signs that a woman may be in premature labor is back pain and pelvic pain. So they don't have to be contractions, but merely having pain in the back or pain in the pelvis is a possible symptom of premature labor. And this woman was 34 weeks, and term is 37, and all the way term is 40 weeks. This woman was sent to the hospital and was seen by a resident who happened to be white. And I do want to make clear that not all white residents would have acted in the same manner, but there are too many cases of white physicians acting in an implicitly or unconsciously biased way. And that goes for some black physicians too. But to get to the heart of the story, the decision that this resident made was to send the patient home, which was clearly the wrong thing to do in a patient that was as high risk as this young black woman was. And when she notified Dr. Coleman that that was her plan, Dr. Coleman got up at 10:30 at night and came in the hospital to see her patient and made the correct decision, which was that the patient needed to be observed in the hospital. Dr. Coleman went on to notify the director of the residency about this incident and to say that this incident brought forth a teachable moment, if you will, and that this may have been a case of implicit bias. The incident bubbled up to me, and I was the interim chairman of the department at the time, and I wrote a memo to the department, and basically my memo said three things. Number one, this incident presented an opportunity for us all to learn. Number two, this incident did not comport with humane medical care because you don't send people home in excruciating pain. Number three, this incident did not comport with safe medical care, because had this woman gone and delivered a premature baby outside the hospital with no medical support, this could have been a disaster for the baby. And fourthly, I pointed out that this decision may have represented implicit bias. Well, I sent that memo to the department, and the department had a firestorm. I was accused of calling white physicians racist. And so I decided to call a meeting, but first I wrote a second memo, and I emphasized that we deal with a population that has to experience implicit bias on many, many levels, and the only way for us to overcome this is to understand that we all can have implicit bias as an African-American male physician. I can have implicit bias even toward an African-American patient. And the only way for us to overcome this is to be conscious that we all can harbor this. And as a background to all of this, people need to understand that it's not us who brought up this issue of implicit bias. There are 2,000 or 3,000 articles in the medical literature today, documenting how implicit bias leads to bad and disastrous outcomes in black patients, and particularly in black mothers. In this country, black mothers die, meaning when I say black mothers, I mean black pregnant women. Black pregnant women die in childbirth at a rate that's between 2 and 3 times higher than white pregnant women. And white pregnant women die in this country at rates that are higher than any industrialized nation on the face of the earth. So this is a huge, huge problem. Long story short, I called a meeting of the department to discuss this. The dean of the medical school at the time canceled my meeting, and so another meeting was called. And at that meeting, which neither Dr. Coleman nor I was allowed to attend, we were held up to all kinds of ridicule simply for having brought this problem forward. And that's really the story in a nutshell. I then applied to become the permanent chair of the department, and I was denied, and I was told that one of the reasons that I was denied was because the people on the hospital side, and mind you, the medical school and the hospital are separate, although they work together, but I was told that the people on the hospital side didn't love me and never would, and that's the reason that I couldn't be promoted to permanent chair. However, don't anybody get it twisted. This fight is not about me being permanent chair. This fight is about trying to save the lives of black mothers and black children, and this fight is about discouraging in the strongest way possible people from retaliating against physicians who bring up the issue of implicit bias. And I want to say one more thing, and then I'm going to turn it over to you and to Dr. Coleman, and that is that your audience must understand that people who raise implicit bias are often retaliated against. This is nothing new. One of my best examples is a sister named Dr. Aletha Maybank, who was appointed the first diversity, equity, and inclusion advisor for the American Medical Association. And the American Medical Association is a huge medical organization of doctors all over the country. And she brought up the issue of implicit bias, unconscious bias, and began to receive so many threats to her life and personal safety that the American Medical Association had to place security guards at her home to protect her. So this is what we're fighting against. We're fighting for the right to raise this issue to attempt to save the lives of black women and children.
Wow, that is amazing. Dr. Berry, let me say that we have I guess the name of the hospital down here is now Lakeland, whatever, Spectrum. At least me and my family, we won't go to that hospital because we understand once we get there what they might do. I remember Dr. Tanz, they do everything they can to keep him from that hospital because he tell it like it is. They don't want you to tell the truth. They want you to be walking around here believing everything they say is correct, and we're dying. We are dying. You're talking about babies dying, infant mortality. I mean, it's here. I mean, it's right here in the city of Benton. Dr. Tanz would tell you. He'll say, well, look, he said, what's happening? I had the president of the hospital come. He's a 7-day advantage. They don't do anything on Saturday.
But on Saturday morning, he came to my home to sit at my kitchen table for 4 hours trying to explain to me all the things he will do. And I laid out a program for him to make sure he understand the importance of a black person's life, a baby, you see. But the only way that I think I get things done, because I'm always in their face, and I don't care whether they like me or not. Just like the governor with this water, they wasn't going to do anything because it was black people. They didn't care about the water was full of lead. They was looking for a fall guy, and they thought that they could find me. But they didn't realize, I don't care. I'm not trying to win a popularity contest. You don't have to like me, you see. The black people sometimes want white folks to like them. You don't have to like me. I don't need your love. I got enough love. But the point is, I care more about the future of our children than anything else, and that's why I take a stand on things that normal people will not. I'm pretty sure that, you know, you can read a lot of information about me, and people all around the world, you know, people are listening. I just, you know, when you were speaking, I got in the chat room, the first thing that the guy said, that, you know, that he, that they're willing to support you, you know, on this issue. And I like for people to talk and just lay it out. You just, you know, you didn't sugarcoat it. You just laid it out so they can understand, that people can understand what you're saying. A lot of times we talk and people don't understand what's going on. And I think you did a great job. But
well,
before
thank you.
It, yeah.
No,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, in terms of support at this point, I think the best thing that people can do is to let their voices be heard, and in a concrete way, that means writing letters. This suit that was filed specifically against three individuals and the Board of Governors of Wayne State University, and probably the best thing people can do is to drown the Board of Governors in letters, letting them know how they feel about this kind of retaliation and this kind of treatment of black patients. And it's really, again, the treatment of black patients. And they should let the governor's office and the lieutenant governor's office know how they feel about what is going on with this issue at Wayne State University.
You know, I strongly agree with you. You can count on me to write a letter or two. And also, we got a huge listening audience today. The word went out about you was going to be on, and we have a huge listening audience, and maybe I can get a couple of hundred of them to write letters.
Right.
And I think that would be crucial. You know, those who are out there, what you can do is give me the address, or give me the name where we're going to send the a letter to. And if not, I'll send it out in an email, and also next Sunday I would announce it every Sunday to make sure that everybody understand what we're trying to accomplish here. Because a lot of times, you know, we want to make sure that we're doing what we're supposed to do. That way, if we're doing everything that's right, Doc, we can do some things and make some changes. Because I tell you, we have a history down here of fighting until the end. And we know they'll come after you. There's not a doubt in my mind that they'll come, you know. And I'm a perfect example of that, but I've been able to beat them down, you see. Even with this water crisis that they knew that we was having, they had the nerve to send two detectives to my house we've been passing out water for over 4 years, and not from them, but they have tried to accuse us of selling water in Indiana and all kind of stuff, you know, that they knew that wasn't true. But, you know, one of the things that they do, they put it out there. And one thing black people would do, they would take that and run with it because white folks said it, you see. And that's how they tried to do, but they realized they got the wrong man, because I don't care. I don't care what you say. I don't care what you do. If you got something for me, bring it on. And that's my history. Thank you so much. I'm gonna bring in Dr. Pullman. And you hang with me, because they might have some questions for you And they'll shoot them up in a minute because it's ready. And in the chat, they got some. But I'm going to bring in Dr. Coleman for now, and then we'll talk later. Hold that thought.
All right,
and we will
right
talk
here.
All right. Dr. Coleman.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me on, Reverend Tuesday.
Oh, it's an honor. It's an honor to have you and Dr. Berry on. It's an honor. See, we got to treat y'all
thank
with
you.
Love and respect. That's how we do that. See, we got to honor
thank
our heroes. That's how we do that. But listen, you talk to me. You tell me what you want the people to know.
So, again, you know, this issue is very important, as Dr. Berry has already discussed. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we really need to talk about is Black maternal health care. Black women consistently have the nation's highest maternal mortality rate. To just give you some numbers to put it in perspective, in 2014, there were 52.4 Black moms who died either in childbirth or in that period involving childbirth per 100,000 Black patients. In 2020, that number rose to 55.3 per 100,000. And in 2021, that's just 2 years ago, that number went to 69.9. That's 70 deaths, Black maternal deaths per 100,000. We're going in the wrong direction. We're going in the wrong direction. Now, there are some potential reasons for these numbers and these stats. Black mothers are almost three times as likely as white mothers to have a life-threatening delivery complication. They are eight times more likely to die from a pregnancy-related issue. And then there are obvious things like gaps in their cesarean section rates and breastfeeding rates. More Black babies are born preterm or low birth weight. And those are major factors of infant mortality, and we know those effects of infant mortality on our society. So, you know, when you talk about these issues and what they are, we can't talk about those issues without talking about the consequences of systemic racism and implicit bias and the effect that it has on the delivery care model in this country. So we have to talk about it because it's real and it exists. Implicit bias can drastically impact the physician-patient relationship. It can affect how patients receive their care, and it can definitely affect how those healthcare outcomes occur as a result of the treatment received or not received.
Very good. Also, one of the things that I know in reference to when we talk about the death of our babies has been also the mother. You know, we have an issue here. Have you did any research on Lakeland Hospital here, or Spectrum Hospital, whatever they, you know, they keep changing the name. We don't even know the name of the hospital no more. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with any specifics of Spectrum or Lakeland, but what I can tell you is that, you know, the issue of implicit bias and systemic racism in healthcare is major, and it doesn't matter which hospital it is because we see it all over the state and the region, this city for sure. So, you know, I don't know anything specifically about those institutions, but what I can tell you is that it is a national crisis. It is a problem that has been around for decades, and, you know, until we are willing to have open discussions and dialogue and frank discussions that are honest, then we will continue to see unethical and unequal and inequitable care as it relates to Black maternal health care.
You know, and that's huge. It's always good to see and hear that doctors are stepping up to the plate, especially Black doctors, because, like you said, you know, they have a history of figuring out a way how they can blackball us, how they can different things, because they work together, you know, and they don't even have to like each other. They'll work together to stop you from achieving any of your goals, and they're good at that. As a matter of fact, they're good at that. They're professionals at that. And one of the things when you think about a small city like Benton Harbor, you know, some of the things that have happened here that nobody would believe. You know, I thank God for Dr. Tan. Dr. Tan has taken the time out and they ridicule him. They all over him. They get Black people to talk about him. They get, you know, this is what they do. You see, but unfortunately, Dr. Tampa, fortunately, Dr. Pam's got me, and I'm going to make sure that I cover him and make sure that we're doing the things that need to be done. But I really, really, really gonna help with a writing campaign. So the only thing you have to do is send me the person you want me to send it to, the address, and I will make sure, you know, we get a couple of hundred letters at least down there, and 'cause every week I'm going to be mentioning it, and I want people that's listening, I want you to make sure if once we get the address that you start writing, because we're going to stand together. My team stay together. People that listen to me on Sunday, they stay together because they almost have to listen. If they listen to me, they'll take some action, and they're willing to take action and you know, to take this thing to another level. Also, I'm working now to get you guys both on the Carl Nelson Show. That's another. They're nationwide. Carl Nelson. You probably have heard of Carl Nelson. He's one of the biggest shows there, but he comes on early in the morning. So I'm working with him to find some fans, and also to find other people to get you guys on so y'all can spread the word. That's my goal. So,
we appreciate all of your efforts.
Well, we're going to do whatever we can, you see. And I understand not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until we face it. So we got to know that. You know, we got to know that we got to get out here and do what needs to be done, take this thing to a whole different level, see what happens, and at least put up some kind of offense that people could see that people actually out here really care. Well, look, in your closing words, you tell us what you want us to do also.
What I would like to see is a real campaign around access to equitable health care. I think that, you know, when moms have access, there's lots of support that we can see, you know, change and we put in place to help moms. We can look at how do we decrease this health disparity gap. I think access to care is one of the biggest things that we can see. We need to see physicians who are able to take care of patients in the communities in which they live. That's a huge problem. You know, if patients can't get to a physician because it's inconvenient, they don't have transportation, or there's not a physician in their neighborhood or in their community, then that makes it difficult for them to get the care that they receive. We know that chronic hypertension and diabetes plague our communities. We know that. So I'd like to see, instead of seeing so many dialysis units on every corner, I'd like to see physicians in those neighborhoods who can treat hypertension and diabetes. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see us make some real steps towards really closing the gap on health disparities in our communities. I know it's not going to, you know, be overnight. I know it's going to take time.
Right.
But maternal health care is health care. And if we don't take care of our moms, we don't take care of these black babies, we're going to see that this is going to continue to go on and on and on. And the time is now. We're in a crisis right now. We're in a crisis now.
I agree 100%. Listen, I got a lot of friends up there in Detroit also. You know, the Michigan Welfare Rights, D-Don, all of these are my people, and they love me. And I'm going to get them to help you. And if it's okay with you, I'd like to give them your phone number so they can call off when they can call you and y'all can hold a conversation.
We would appreciate any opportunity to get the message out that, you know, black health care disparities are a significant problem in our communities, and we'd like to work with anybody who wants to work towards affecting that change.
You wouldn't have to know Maureen Taylor, do you?
I'm not sure I know that name. No,
they were the people with the Michigan Welfare Rights. And
what I will say, Reverend King, is that between myself and Dr. Barry, we've got almost 70 years of practice, 70 years of caring for the women in the city of Detroit, 70 years of delivering what we think is great prenatal care, good health care to the patients that we serve. And, you know, we're advocates in this fight. We're advocates for these women who sometimes don't have a voice. And we know that, you know, sometimes when you feel like you don't have a voice, it's easy to give up. But Dr. Barry and I are here to bring attention to this fight. We know that it's a fight. And we just, we, you know, anyone who is willing to help us, you know, fight this fight, we welcome it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, I'd like to thank you and Dr. Barrett for being on the show. And let me say this, anytime that you want to come on and say something, and like I said, we have a huge, huge listening audience, and you're welcome to come on. You can come anytime, even if you just have a message that you want to give or something that you might want to say or you might want to get out. And I got a lot of my people are from Detroit that listen to this show. As a matter of fact, even now that, you know, I can see the numbers and stuff, that we can connect you guys together so we can give you the support you need, because you're going to need all the support y'all can get, because I know what you're dealing with. When you talk about Wayne State and all this kind of stuff, they got their toenail in just about everything that goes on in Detroit, you know. So we have to find a way that we can back you guys up so you can have someone to turn to if we need to come down there and pick it or whatever we need to do. You let us know, and we will definitely come running. And that is no ifs, ands, and buts about it. And Dr. Barry,
you
go
like
ahead.
To add – two things to what Dr. Coleman said. Now, in addition to 70 years of care to patients in Detroit and to the state of Michigan that we've combined offered, we've also offered that many years of teaching to medical students and residents at Wayne State University. So Wayne State ought to know very well where our hearts are, number one. Number two, I want to thank, from both of us, from Dr. Coleman and myself, I want to thank Reverend Dr. Tynes, because he has taken this on and put real energy into it, and I can't thank him enough. And thank you to all your listeners for allowing us to speak to this issue. Thank you very much.
And I just want you to let, you know, you and Dr. Coleman know that, you know, we got your back. Well, there's nothing else Dr. Tynes will tell you. That, you know, once I make a commitment, you know, you got me. And then you got my followers. And the ones that follow me, we got them too. And we're all over the state, all over the country. I mean, it's huge. So we're going to follow up. My plan is to follow up with Dr. Barry and Dr. Coleman. And then maybe we can set a plan out. And whatever you do, give me the address that you want the letters to go to, and I'll make sure that my listeners get them. And I also make sure that they at least send a letter, and your support, and our support is, you know, we're supporting you, and we want to make sure that they get the message loud and clear. So, and don't, you know, hesitate to call me. You can, you know, or, you know, if you call Dr. Tynes will talk to you and tell you, what we're doing and what we need to do. You don't hesitate. Just, you know, because you got a friend in me. And I want you
right.
And Dr. Coleman to do this. So on that note.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Amen. All right. And listen, we'll come soon. And also, I'm still working on Carl Nelson. I'm working on him to get him to call you guys.
Thank you very much.
You guys have a very
nice day.
All right. Now I'm going to bring in my good friend Annette. Annette, talk to me. Tell us what we can do and what we need to do about what's really, really, really going on. And I know it's crucial that people know about this. Take your time, but also don't forget about McDonald's Monday. That's crucial. You know, we got to tell them that, you know, we don't go to McDonald's on Monday. Talk to me now, Annette.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. We want every single church, our summer season, while the youth and the students are out, We want everybody to please blow the whistle around the world. This is with the Davis Brothers Lumber Company of Ansley, Louisiana. We have been revealed this wealth, showing that this was wrongfully taken, it's been hidden and stolen. And so as the black farmers, we are, this black farmers, along with the black churches that we come on, we blow the whistle. This is, please Google that as well. It is a government program for people whenever they expose white collar crime, or they can recover this money. They give you a portion of the money that is recovered, from 15% to 30%. So that's why we are having everyone to come on, because you will be getting paid to blow the whistle, but we're going to show that this has been wrongfully taken. So, Reverend Pinckney, it is full circle, and I have arrived back in Louisiana now and getting ready to go forth. So we're asking everyone to please come on with this. This is very important. This is your inheritance. This is reparations. We want to team up with other groups, for example, Oakland, who is talking about the reparations, along with the Tulsa survivors. Again, this is wealth that has been wrongfully taken, stolen, and hidden, but this is our opportunity to get it back. So please have your church, have your pastors, your family members, get in touch again with the schools. It's very disturbing to see how we have really been calling on us as a people. This is an opportunity for us to give, well, the Bible being fulfilled. But it's very important what they say, the harvest is plenty, but the laborers are few. You know, thank you so much for your work and your service and your commitment. Reverend Pinckney, that's exactly what they do. They go and they retaliate against the whistleblowers and the people who are speaking out. I had this same experience in 1996 at Mather Air Force Base about the contaminated water. And when I look at the Camp Lejeune, and now they want to give people back their have money to give to them, when they knew this all along. So why do they wait so long when they know that this is what is going on right at that moment, right now, at that moment, right now in Benton Harbor, right now in Jackson, Mississippi, right now, I think that was Louisiana with the, was it Waterproof Louisiana? And hearing about the water, even while I was in San Diego, and of course out in Las Vegas, that is about to dry up totally from no water. So this is very, very important. The food source is very important. I was looking at Senator Booker, who's our number one fighter for the black farmers. It's very important, but we team up with our politicians that are going to bat for us, that we support them, and that our voices are heard. So thank you so much, Reverend Pinckney, for the opportunity.
Absolutely. You know, it's an honor. But one of the things I do want us to mention, let's talk about Monday McDonald. Can you hit on that real fast for me?
Yes, I will. And again, we can put this, and we need to get calendars, just like we're doing the whistles. We need to get calendars. And when you get your calendar, it's going to have at the top Mondays, McDonald Mondays, no fast foods. And we're making a difference, too. Ticket Tuesday, no lottery tickets, no gambling, and no tobacco, No tobacco products on Tuesday. Walmart Wednesday. No Walmart or no Mart stores. Thirsty Thursday. No gasoline and no alcohol on Thirsty Thursday. And Foreign Friday, this is a huge, very important day. Do not go to no foreigners on Friday. No foreigners on Friday. Black by black only. Black owned, O-W-N-ly. Go to the black owned stores. Shop only in the black stores. And that those foreigners do not come into our stores. We do not go into their stores. And this is very important too, the Sabbath Saturday, to keep the Sabbath holy. So we really want to really follow these principles that have been given to us and the commandments as well, and to fulfill the prophecy that has also been given to us.
Absolutely. And we know that, you know, if they don't spend money with us, we shouldn't be spending money with them, you know. The only thing they do, they know that a lot of people don't have transport, so they flood these Indian stores inside our community. These Korean stores, they're in our community where you can almost walk to get, or you know, and they know that, and that's how they do us. See what it is. Even everything is designed to be against us. You know,
it is.
You know, yeah. We got. Not all white folks is bad. Don't, you know, I ain't gonna say that. Not all Mexicans
That's
is bad.
Right.
But you know, and here's the other thing, not all Koreans are bad. But they won't
right.
spend no money in the store. Mexicans is not gonna spend no money in our stores. White folks is not gonna spend no money in our stores, you see. And some black folks ain't gonna spend no money in our store. So, you know, the way I look at it, black folks has been robbed. They've been robbed of themselves. They
yes.
don't even know who they are. They don't have a clue
yes.
who they are. You know, they walk around, you know, thinking that these folks like them. I call it the evil empire. That's what they are. They're evil and they're wicked,
mm-hmm.
and they don't care about nobody. And listen, here's what people don't know. This governor we got, she can, like, after we had pressured her to clean this water thing up, I mean pressure her butt, then she comes down here and do the. Now she want to walk around here trying to do a victory lap. She don't get no victory lap because, number one,
exactly.
we don't even know how many people done died from this water. We don't know how many
mm-hmm.
people that's on dialysis from this water.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know who all had liver failure, heart failure,
mm-hmm.
brain failure. We don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll never know because white folks is not going to allow you to know these things. They're not
mm-hmm.
going to let you know how much damage this white woman done in our community. She wants to be in the parade and ride in the parade so everybody can see her, and she waving like she doing something. You know, in my eyes, like
right.
she ain't worth a nickel. You know, she's a murderer, you ask me.
Exactly. And, you know, the property
yeah.
value a lot of times that go plummet when you're
yeah.
in a contaminated area. So, you know.
And the thing is, they want to make her a hero. Now, she done saved black folks. No, you can destroy almost half the community, because half of them is about as crazy as you can get.
Exactly.
So we don't get it, though, Annette. We do not get this. You know, we don't allow them to, you know, our brothers and sisters, you know, it takes 24 hours to feed themselves and their family, most of them, you know. They got us all hooked up
yeah.
on drugs and guns and stuff. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
I last time I was, I had said 3% of our 50 million black folks, you know, was ghettoish. You know, I had to go up to 5%, 10%. Now I'm at 20% because the more cities I go to, you know, And it's steady, you know. You understand what I'm saying, you know. You know, we're up to 20% now, and it's, you know, and the thing of it is that we don't get it. We do all these stupid things, and inside the community, then we want these evil, wicked people to like us, and try
mm-hmm.
to be gentle to them. You know, I went to the governor's mansion. Or I went to the White House, Man, if you ain't paying my way, you ain't sending Air Force One to pick me up. Don't invite me, because I ain't paying my money coming. I'm not doing that. You won't get me to fly to no White House or visit you so you can take a photo app. Man, you better go somewhere and sit down, you know. But that's how, you know, black people want to be with these white folks. They think that they have made it. If they hang out on their Facebook page, you see them all up with these folks that don't even like them, you know. I know
that's
this guy, Fred Upton here, the heir to Whirlpool. I know where I remember he was rubbing the back of the head of the mayor. He was rubbing the back, like petting him like a dog. And he couldn't say nothing or he was too scared to say something. But to me, it wasn't even funny to me, but it's funny now. But look,
right,
we got a long way to go in that. We got to make sure we're doing the things that need to be done. Future of our children. I think that's what white folks do. They plan 10 and 15 years down the road. You see, we live.
Well, again, this has been a system that has been in place since the beginning of this country. But I do want to say that I saw Alabama. Alabama has a new model that they're going to try. They say, listen, we've been putting this money into the schools and we keep coming up last. We're going to give this money to the families and let them see if they can do better than what the school is doing. Now, if they, again, we do want to target these young people while they are out for the summer, give them the opportunity to run their own little businesses, whatever that may be, and we are supporting each other businesses. And when we do this, we are giving them financial literacy where they're going to be able to make their money make money. And so when we change the economic infrastructure, and we're doing that through by having these home-based family business, teaching you how to make sure that you do your taxes properly, because even wealthy people, they go to prison because they do not know how to do their taxes. And so this is a wonderful opportunity. This is a wonderful opportunity because of the shell companies that are associated with the Davis brothers. These are companies that we want people to be in place so you can be able to be that next company that take over from where these people have wrongfully stolen, and this was your forefathers, and you need to step up into the chairman of the board and running these companies and corporations that have been wrongfully stolen from us. So when we change and renew our mind, and through the chewing of our wealth by, you know, McDonald Mondays and Ticket Tuesdays and Walmart Wednesdays, we are shifting and making it where instead of it being as a weakness of being consumers, what we're going to be doing is flexing our economic power, and we're going to direct those dollars right back to the community. We're going to only be doing business with each other businesses and then doing business with businesses that are doing business with us. So if those businesses are not supporting us or not supporting our children, not having apprenticeship programs, not having where they are supporting these community programs, I mean, everything from mowing yards to washing cars to recycling, these are things that we can be doing this summer that's going to generate jobs, that's going to generate opportunity, that's going to put this economic money back into our own community. So if they're not, these businesses, these Indians and nieces, the Vietnamese, the Chinese, the Taiwan, if these people are not putting money back into our community, we don't have to actually tell you to leave. We don't have to even boycott you. We're just only making sure that we are doing business with businesses that are doing business with us, and then creating businesses If we don't have that business, then we can create those businesses and doing a lot of it through our churches to, again, this
you know
is
what?
The way we.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And let me say this, too. Well, one of the things, I'm surprised that the community don't step up. Like all these athletes, one of the requirements, the father or the uncle or somebody should tell them, they need, you know, as soon as you sign that big contract, you should have a 501c3. Because why give the government 30% of your salary when you can put that right back in the community? See, they tell them not to do it, telling them they're going to lose money. You're not going to lose any money. You see, but they don't tell them that. They tell them, see, what you do, everything that you put into this community, you can write it all towards that 30% of that's what they tax you when you over $1 million. Over $1 million, you have to pay 30% of your salary for taxes, you know. And that's why most of them come up with all these loopholes. But black folks, they'd be given like LeBron James, for the first 10 years, he gave 30% of his salary back to the governor.
Exactly.
And I tried to tell one guy here that, and they thought, oh, he wants something. I don't want nothing from you. I'm trying to save you some money. But that's how black folks do.
I saw that video.
I don't want none of your money because I'm not motivated by money. But look, on that note, we just ran out of time.
Yes.
So let's do this tomorrow. We'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock tomorrow, and I'm gonna talk about them 501c3s and these athletes not putting back into the community. And I'm not talking about no gym shoes and t-shirts. I'm talking about putting back in there, keeping that dollar circulating. On that note,
that's
tomorrow, 1 o'clock, everybody. See you all.